And I think the devil's job is to try to figure out in your life and in my life and in the lives of these students, what can I put in big bold letters across the top of their story that will mislead them away from their ministry and away from their purpose and away from the real meaning of life. I believe that if you let him, the enemy will sit at the editor's desk of your life. And he'll take the facts of what happens to you and the facts of what you've been through and the facts. And what he'll do, he's really good at it too. He'll suggest all of this in your mind, by the way. You're not looking for a guy with a pitchfork. You're looking for a guy that looks an awful lot and sounds an awful lot like you. This is how he does it. He gets inside because they're both running the same organization, you understand. It's your brain and then it's the enemy. And so the enemy, if you let him, he'll take everything that happened to you. And he won't necessarily tell you stuff that didn't happen. He'll arrange it in such a way to get you to click through. And he'll hit you with such a thought that seems so conclusive. He'll hit you with such a thought that is so gripping. See, that's what he's trying to do. That's what they're trying to do on the bottom of CNN, the bottom of Fox News, and the top of whatever paper that you want to read above the fold. What is the thing we can say at the top that will keep them from reading on to find out the real story? That will cause them to click through. What can I tell them? Maybe I can tell them that because they were abused, they're worthless. Maybe I can tell them that because they struggle in this one subject, that they're learning disabled. Yeah, that's what I'll tell them. I'll put a headline over their life when they're young. It'll say, Tina has a learning disability. And so when Tina thinks of herself, she'll think of herself in terms of one limitation in one area, but I won't let her see that it's just one area and that she's really got gifts in other areas that can shine if she can stick with it and if she can focus on what she's good at. But I don't want her to see that. I want her to read the rest of my story instead of knowing the real story. Maybe if I convince what's your name?
Zion.
If I convince Zion, that's too biblical of a name. What's your name? Huh?
Micah.
My God. What do we got up here? The disciples? Freaking all the prophets. Where's Jeremiah? Who has a normal name?
Lauren.
Maybe if I convince Lauren that nobody loves her, that nobody loves her. There will, in fact, be a lot of people in her life who love her. But if I can put her loneliness as the headline over her life, I can get her to do things to try to experience the semblance of love that will keep her from ever really understanding the substance of it. I just said a whole lot with just a little. The semblance can keep you from the substance. Maybe I can convince them that they're an addict, and then maybe they'll think they have no control, and then maybe they'll think that they're not accountable for their actions because it's just who they are, because it's who their dad was. Maybe then I can convince him that he'll never be a good dad because he never had a good dad. Maybe I can take the fact that his dad walked out when he was 7, and if I print that big enough and say it often enough and drop it off at his doorstep every day as a reminder, maybe then but the devil is a liar. See, here's what I found out. Here's what I found out. Here's what the Charlotte Observer taught me. Here's what I learned from Huffington Post, and here's what I learned from Joseph. You don't get to control your story, but you do get to choose your headlines. You don't get to select the script of your story. Ask Joseph. He wouldn't have chosen to be thrown into a pit by his brothers when he was 17 years old. He wouldn't have chosen to be falsely accused of rape and thrown into a prison as a reward for his excellent strategic management of Potiphar's house. Yet all of these things happened, and all of these things were traumatic, but they were not defining. Just because it happened doesn't mean it has to make the headlines. The one who writes the story is not the one who chooses the headlines. And you know, life is going to put some stuff in your story that you wish you could change, and some stuff in your story that you didn't choose. And yet Joseph, with a rape charge, false imprisonment, near death at the hands of his brothers, at the end of it all, as he is publishing the proclamation of what his life has been all about, has the editorial authority to look at everything that he's been through and see all of those events that could have marked him and in many ways probably did shape him and I'm sure pained him greatly. But when he said at the end of it all that you meant it for evil, and if you were writing my story, you would have had me as a slave, but I'm not a slave. And if you were writing my story, you would have had me as an arrogant 17-year-old who didn't know any better than to keep his dreams to himself. But I've changed from that. And if you were writing my story, and if life were writing my story, I'd be a victim. But I refuse to let what happened to me when I was 17 be the headline of my life when I'm 30. And I refuse to let the divorce that I went through when I was 30 define me when I'm 40. And I refuse to let the parenting mistake that I made when I was 40 define me when I'm 50. See, in other words, I'm not just allowing life to write my headlines. Now, things can happen to me, but there's a big difference between what happens to me and what I headline. I'm trying to say, and maybe I should just say it because I'm afraid it won't come across if I don't put it this plainly. You are not the author, but you are the editor. You are not the author, but you are the editor. Now, that's a different relationship. I write books. I just finished my fourth book. Guess what the editor does not do in the role that he has? He doesn't determine what the book is about. And in the same way, I don't believe God has really called us to determine what our life is about. I think he's already given us that. I think Joseph illustrates it clearly. He said, I was put here. In fact, he uses a word. He says, I was sent here to save lives. I was sent here. What kind of way would that be to go back to school next week? I was sent here. I know, devil, you're trying to tell me that the reason I'm at this new school is because my parents suck and they never should have moved and I was happier in Ohio. And I know you're trying to tell me that. That's fine. That's fine. You can tell me that. You can suggest that. But I ultimately get to decide the reason I'm here. And I choose to see it that I was sent. That I was sent. You need a dream to drive your decisions. You need a dream to drive your decisions. You need a dream to drive you toward your destiny. What you don't need at this point in your life is the details of that dream. Joseph was 17 when he saw a vision that he didn't understand. He saw something that was beyond his maturity to comprehend or really even handle, in that he saw himself surrounded by 11 sheaves of grain, bowing down to his sheaf of grain. He was seeing a picture of how one day his brothers would come and bow down before him, followed up by a second dream, because when God is doing something in your life, he'll reinforce it in various ways. You see a little here, there, a little, and you see a little, and you do it a little bit, and you read this, and you see that, and the pastor will say this, your friend will say that, and your mom will say that, and God will start speaking, and you'll start to feel something. But you won't really know the details. You'll just know that your dream is in development. The second dream he sees some stars, and he sees the stars and the sun and the moon bowing down to him. So this time it's not only his brothers, but his parents that are going to be dependent on him. He almost sees it in a way that's very ambitious. At the end of his life, when we met him at the beginning of the sermon, where he's speaking to his brothers who hated him so much that instead of leaving him for dead, which would have actually been a kindness, they sold him. They sold him out. Now, I was reading something, and I want to go a little deeper into this. Is this good preaching?
Yes.
I want to go to this real quick because you get a little more insight into how Joseph refused to let the enemy be his editor. Why in the world would you let your enemy be your editor? Why would you let your doubt and your cynicism and your negativity and your past tell you where you're going? And so Joseph, God, this is good. Joseph is explaining to his brothers the point of view, because everybody writes from their point of view, right? I mean, that's one of the things you got to decide if you're writing a story is, what's my point of view? And Joseph is explaining to his brothers his point of view that allowed him to come to this place where he could say, I know that the story should be they sold Joseph out, but that's not what I'm going to call these chapters of my life. It says in Genesis 45, verse 4, then Joseph said to his brothers, come close to me. Now, I would have called them close so I could get my hands around their neck after what they had done to me. But he understands that he is only responsible for his response. You are not responsible for all of the events that occur, only your response to those events. Your parents' divorce was not your fault. The devil is a liar. If he's been telling you that, kick him off the editor's desk and tell him, I refuse to see it that way. That's the wrong lens. That can't be true. That is not God. But he said, I am your brother, Joseph, the one, watch this, you sold into Egypt. You got it? You sold. And that's the headline. Joseph's brothers sell him as a slave. Cruel brothers sell cocky kid with the colorful coat, I don't know, as a slave into Egypt. That's the headline. That's the clickbait. That's how most of us in the room would have written it, by the way, from Joseph's point of view. You sold me. He says it. It happened. You sold me. You did it. It happened. You sold me into Egypt. Now, don't be distressed. And don't be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me. Now, we've got two possible headlines here that we can choose from. Remember that Bible that your parents used to have, and it was some inductive method study Bible. I went to seminary. I don't even know what that means. But one thing I remember about big old thick Bible, I'm telling you, the Bible was like that. Yeah. But the Bible was big. It was big print, and I think that's why your parents had it. But but can y'all hear me okay? And so this big thick Bible, and it was cool because it had all the same chapters in the Bible. But you know how, like, in this Bible, before each chapter, it has a heading that tells you what that chapter is about. This Bible was cool because it had a blank space where normally the heading would be. And the idea of it was, because it had big old margins where you could write notes in the margins. But my favorite part was that you got to choose your own heading. So let's play a game right now. Let's choose our heading. For Genesis 45, we're just going to do two verses. We can't do a whole chapter right now, but I'll just get you started. And maybe this will give you a new way to look at your life. And maybe this will get you a new way to look at bankruptcy. And maybe this will get you a new way to look at the child that you didn't plan to have, but you had them and you're a little older than you thought you're going to be. And maybe this will give you a new way to plan for the thing that you flunked and the thing that you failed at and the thing that embarrassed you. Maybe, just maybe. In Genesis 45, 4, it said, you sold me. In Genesis 45, 5, it said, God sent me. Same event, different headline. And the headline you choose about an event determines whether you stay stuck in what happened or if you move forward to where you're headed. Wow. I don't write my headlines about what happened. I write my headline based on where I'm headed. That's why it's called a headline, because I'm headed somewhere. I have a dream and I'm going toward it.
Hey, thank you for watching. Make sure you subscribe to this channel so you don't miss a single video or live stream. And share this video with a friend. And don't forget, you can join me live every Sunday. Thanks again for watching.